I felt personally targeted when Todd said we overthink things sometimes, so I don't know if he meant that for me, but before I get started this evening, I want to start by thanking some people. Of course, Stephen and Daryl and Bruce tonight, but Todd especially this morning and the Devo tonight. We talked about who would fill in for David on short notice. We really didn't feel like we had an opportunity to call in anybody, so it was going to be him or me. And I said, well, I have a lesson that I could work into a sermon, but it's called hate. And Todd immediately said, well, then I'll preach tomorrow. And I think that we chose quite well, because I very much enjoyed his sermon. And then as I tried to put the finishing touches on this lesson, my concern, and I didn't only had a day to worry about this, but I worried about it quite a bit last night, was they won't understand the context of this, because I originally came up with this lesson when I was teaching 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John in the way John talked about love. We were doing this in the Seekers earlier. And as I sat here this morning in the combined class and had Randy review all of the material that needed to be the background for this, it reminded me that there may not be such a thing as a coincidence. And so I think that was really well done. And Randy, I very much thank you for both bringing that message this morning and whatever part you had to play in the timing of it, because that was the hate is not the answer, of course. Love is the answer. But John cautions us about hate, and Matthew and Luke and Jesus, of course, himself. And so we're going to talk a little bit about it. And I'll tell you guys, this is a lesson that I developed for myself. Just a little personal aside, I come from grudge holders. When my mother passed, it's been 20 years now, my sister showed up, and it's a sister who hadn't seen my mother in 18 years before that. They had gotten out over something, some disagreement or disgruntled, and had not been in each other's presence for 2 decades. And as a learning and growing and developing Christian, I knew there was something wrong with that. I obviously know I come from stubborn people. When you're in a family of pig-headed people, there's no hiding it. It comes through in everything that they do and say. But I thought, you know, there needs to be some sort of measure against this. There needs to be some sort of control for this. And of course, there is. Of course, Jesus gave it to us. And we're going to talk about that a little bit today. But I want to approach hate from a cautionary standpoint, because I feel, because of that legacy and a few other things that don't need to be gone into tonight, that I was mentored in hate. I was raised by people who can really hold a grudge, so really nurture it, keep it and polish it like a diamond. And boy, Christ is calling us out of that. And I think it's our human nature. So be with me tonight. Say a little prayer for me as I get into this, and hopefully I can do it in a sane and... No, I have 2 good working hands. There's no excuse for me not being able to do this. Did I do it? Did Michael do it for me, or did I do it? Oh, thank you, guys. Okay, Luke 6. I'm going to start with 27, so please join me if you've got your own Bible open. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. To the one who strikes you on the cheek, offer up the other. And from the one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Maybe either in that case. Does anyone find this hard? Or is it me? This is a tough one for me. I'll be honest with you. There are scriptures about being kind and looking out for children that I just think, oh, I'm doing great. The love your enemy one has been a struggle. Is it just me or is it anyone else? Okay. And I think that that's good practice for us. There's two concepts on this. You've got to identify your enemies. And how you identify enemies is so important for a Christian. And if we think that we're identifying enemies inside the church, something has gone horribly wrong. And that's really what Randy taught us about this morning. In, I think you touched 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John in one lesson. So, a synopsis of 1, and then the bulk of 2, and a foray into 3. And so, I think that's a great segue for this. And then I'm going to say the opposing concept here. We have God's word, and then the world. The world has ideas of what love and hate are. What can you tell me about the world's idea of love? What does the world think love's about?
Accepting everybody just as they are.
Oh, yeah. I've got to accept everybody right the way they are and not just try to bring them out of a bad situation, but I've got to agree with whatever weird situation they're in. That's the world's definition of love. Is that you guys agree with that? And what do we use love in commercials for? What are we selling when we use love? Anything, yeah. Greeting cards, tires. If you love your family, you'll put her on Bob's tires. Never the negative. Yeah. Well, yes. And love can cause us anxiety sometimes and a lot of emotions. Any of you have children? You don't need me to elaborate. Have you? My first night of sitting watching a clock when I had a teenager who was in town after dark was a revelation for me. And those of you who did this for decades and have done it with grandchildren and great-grandchildren, you have my major respect, because that's a love. So what does the world tell us about hate? Popular society. It's okay. I feel hatred toward this. I hate this political group, and the other political group hates the other one, right? We see that in our popular discourse these days. And I'm not, by the way, sure those people actually do hate each other. But they sure tell us they do. And I'm not sure it's God's definition of either love or hate. Puffs wants you to hate Kleenex, and Kleenex might want you to hate Puffs, right? Now, by the way, I'm not sure they have a big rivalry, but I know they're competing for my dollars. And so they're perfectly willing to use whatever they can to manipulate. Okay, so the culture of the world would like to redefine both love and hate. We're told that love is a strong attraction or romantic notion. Before I became a Christian, love, as I was a teenager, so can I just say that the idea of romantic love was top on my mind? Does anyone remember being a teenager? Todd, you won't remember, but some of you may. Riley, you can relate. And now, when I think love, it's so funny. Romantic love is in the house, but it's not in the front room, right? It's an idea, but love is a bigger thing than that. And we're told that hate is an aversion or a powerful dislike. So anxiety encourages us to experiment with these ideas. I love my new waffle iron, right? Do you? I mean, your old one, did you ever have one that used to shock you when you used it? I put up with that waffle iron for about 9 years because of cheapness. Jim Yeager's not here, so I can just admit it. I'm cheap. And I was glad to get a new one, but there was no love, right? There was no love. Or I hate my political leader, right? Do I hate them? God's word talks very differently about love and hate. And this lesson was a good reminder for me as I delved into it that I don't adopt society's ideas. Does anyone have the unfortunate experience of watching a reality TV show? Has anyone ever been? Okay. What do the producers always create on a reality TV show? Drama, right? And the drama is some sort of conflict that so-and-so wants X and such wants Y, and look, it's so bad. And then the camera follows party X while they talk about party Y, and party Y talks about party X, and the whole thing gets drummed up, can I just say it that way? Just like it's a manufactured product. And I'll be honest with you, that looks to me like the devil's cookbook. That looks like you're reading the recipe card for division, for hatred, for animosity. The devil couldn't have done better, I think. And I'll be honest with you, I think sometimes that's their actual playbook, right, is just to get division started. So that's my caution on hate, is when you start singing from the hate songbook, and I have, you got to realize whose song you're dancing to when that happens, because it isn't God's. Matthew 5, 21 and 22. You have heard it said of the old, you shall not murder. And I think we're all okay with that, right? We're taxpaying citizens in a warm building, a Church of Christ. There's no one here thinks murder is a great idea. Continuing, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says you fool will be liable to the hell of fire. That went pretty far for essentially what I would consider to be hatred. Randy, again, got here ahead of me, as he always does, and talked about this a little bit this morning. The analog that we didn't get into this morning, that when I put this slide together, my notes, was lust and adultery. The law had pretty strict rules about adultery that were widely understood by civilized Hebrews, and they knew how to keep them. And then Jesus came, and what did he say about lust? If you look on someone with lust, what have you done? And that, I'll be honest with you, if there are any of us Christians who were feeling like we're closing in on perfection, these concepts should take us right back to zero. If we're building up our own righteousness inside ourselves, because I'll be perfectly candid with you, the devil would love you to build your own self-righteousness. That's how Satan ended up in rebellion, right? I should be greatest. It's all about me. Our song we just sang, again, ties in so beautifully. It's not about me. And so I think these concepts are brilliant, but they also mean that my standard for behavior just changed. That just moved. I submit to you, there's no chance for me to murder anybody. I mean, I just don't have that in me. But I might have called somebody a fool in the month of November. Possibly a driver who turned right from a left turn lane. And I might have really been angry. I mean, like red-faced angry. And that's wrong. That's incorrect. If I let myself get wound up over that. And I could take a few more steps down that road and be way off base. Both a spiritual danger and a bad citizen. Because if we, in Oklahoma, if you break down every time somebody does a dumb driving maneuver in front of you, you cannot go anywhere, you can't leave home, you have to stay home. It's just not... Maybe it's better in Texas. I wish David were here. I'm going to talk good about Texas for a second. Is it? It's better in Texas? Okay. Oh, I was afraid of that. They have more civilization there. But it isn't good anywhere. Maybe that's it. It's our bad roads that make us bad. Okay. Excuse planation. Bad roads are making me a bad driver. All right. Anyway, back. We want to hate everything we dislike. Are you with me that way? Would you like to hate everything you dislike? Does it feel good to take it the extra step? What about black licorice? I cannot handle the black licorice. Anyone else with me? Okay, it's not good for me. I either have to have more black licorice to get the taste out of my mouth, or water or something afterwards. It's no good for me. I can't handle my black licorice. I don't need to hate it. I don't need to hate it. And I might use the phrase, oh, I hate that candy, casually. But that's not really hate. I hope you guys understand that. And then we want to love everything we enjoy. I don't actually love the red licorice either, by the way. But I love salted toffee. Salted, if you get sea salt and caramel together, I'm there. All right? Marketing material says, I love that. That's not love. And this is just basic human nature. We want to take everything that annoys us to hate, and we want to elevate everything that gives us some sort of delight to love. But God doesn't talk about love and hate this way. And if we were God, the things that we hate are the things that are ungodly. Does that make sense? God's got this right. The things that God delights are the things that are righteous and good. But if I differ from God, let's say that I differ 10%, right? I'm not the standard. What I love is not all righteous, and what I hate is not all evil. And if I start acting that way, I'm putting myself in God's position. And that's where I think we need to be very careful as Christians. So humans need grace for what we dislike, if it's not evil. The Bible talks a lot about disputable matters, and in 1 John, and again, I've cut some of my 1 John stuff out, which is good, because I don't want to pull Todd and go long. I love you, Todd. When he got done preaching and came to the back, I said, Todd, that was really good, but I don't know if you know this, it's 2:30 already. And he looked at me just for a second, and I almost had him, but he didn't believe me. But we need grace for what we dislike if it's not evil. The Bible talks about disputable matters. About 2 years ago, in the middle of a completely unrelated conversation, Randy called me out on a Calvinist streak in me about innate depravity. And Randy said, well, by what you just argued, we were debating something. He said, you agree with the doctrine of innate depravity. And I stared at him and I thought, well, I'm no Calvinist. Randy's point was sin entered the garden and man was not innately sinful before that. But Calvinism tenet holds up that man is innately sinful. And my comment to Randy at the time was, I got to look this up. And what I came back with later is, all I've ever known is depraved man. Right? The only undepraved man I've ever heard about was Christ Jesus. And potentially pre-fall Adam. And of the two, we got a lot of data on Jesus and very little on Adam. So Randy has had grace with me for that. And I would submit to you that the nature of innate depravity in fallen humanity is a debatable matter. And I think we have a lot of those. I don't remember who you said might be disagreed with you this morning. You said, I still love you, even if we disagree. And I thought, that's the gravy. Oh, this is a terrible analogy, Devin. But love can be the gravy that makes a dry turkey go down, okay? And I'm not saying any of you had dry turkey. But it makes a lot of things work within the family of God. Our goal, of course, is to hate what God hates. Are you with me that far? And to love what God loves. And if my will were perfectly aligned with God's, that's what I would naturally love. And that's what I would naturally hate. And I don't think God cares about licorice. So my strong opinions about, well, you know me, everything, are mostly useless, spiritually speaking. So, if I can't full on hate my brother, sorry, I left out an I there, can I at least powerfully dislike him? Is that available to me? Bruce says no. Anyone else? Well, Randy gave us the answer this morning. I don't think I have that option. 1 John. Oh, sorry. I got to go forward. I got to keep remembering to move you guys. No one born of God makes a practice of sinning, for God's seed abides in him, and he cannot keep on sinning because he has been born of God. By this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. So, the first century church, and I sort of made this point this morning, and I apologize, I'd been studying about for this all night, the night before. The first century church was probably much more diverse than we are. I'll be honest with you. If you look at who the Roman Empire brought in, right? The Roman Empire was a huge mover of people. One of the ways that the gospel traveled was the good Roman roads, right? Ports. Roman citizens could travel freely. We hear about that. But it also worked the other way, is that we had barbarians from Gaul, right? And Ethiopians. We had Assyrians, former Chaldeans. We had all these tribes from that area and everywhere the Roman Empire touched, as far away as England, to our certain knowledge, and pretty far down into Africa. You had the Roman Empire bringing people in. And many of the letters we see to these first century churches, and you all can back me up on this, deal with, hey, you all need to get along, right? Because my practice is, if I was a Hebrew before, I think we should do everything. Which way? I have a Judaizing idea of how things go. If you're new to Christianity and your organized religion previously bore some other set of traditions, you might be trying to bring those in. And so I have very little sympathy for modern Christians who are getting into disagreements with each other because they don't like how things are done. I just don't think the Bible gives us any wiggle room on this one. Back to 10. It's evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor the one who does not love his brother. So question, what if my brother is unlovable? And I am not actually talking about Todd when I wrote this question. I don't want you to think that just because I picked on him. Yeah, oh, you are here. Just because I picked on him earlier. I can't pick on David this week. So, what if he's unlovable? You got any feedback for me on that? Do I need to love him? What if my brother's made mistakes? Bad ones. What if my brother will not do things to my personal preference? What if they routinely do things that I don't enjoy? I want it done differently. Or a whole different thing altogether. What if my brother has different cultural practices? What if they're not from my tribe or my society? I was raised in Yankee country, so I'm in a bad problem here. The sweet cornbread? I do not like sweet cornbread. Should I say that? South of the Mason-Dixon? I want that dry Yankee business. What pass are we given on these? Anybody? Can I get my hate on for my brother if any of these conditions are met? Romans 5:8. Give it to me. Let me go there. Ouch. Yeah, okay. Grace, in other words. Your counsel is grace. And then, this is what really hurts me, and this convicted me quite a bit as I studied this lesson personally. And this came from the Seeker's lesson in Proverbs 15:10. There's severe discipline for him who forsakes the way, and whoever hates reproof will die. I got to be honest with you. Some of you have loved me enough to reprove me. And I didn't love that reproof. But I'll tell you, I found out that I didn't hate it either. And I would encourage you guys to be a little bit courageous and risk loving each other. And if you see a brother or sister who requires some reproof, we should have a relationship that lets us approach that. This thing where my sister and mother didn't talk for 20 years is not fitting to be a Christian practice. Can I just bring that forward? And I'm happy to help be a peacemaker or a sounding board and a personal example of somebody who's not perfect, but who has had brothers and sisters love him enough to take him to task. And it didn't cause me to hate. Does that make sense? And I'm surprised it didn't, to be perfectly honest with you, because again, I was raised and mentored in hate. But Jesus calls us out of all that. He called me out of hate as surely as he called me out of whatever petty theft and larceny a child grows up in. I think we're called out of those dramas from reality TV, the backbiting and the recriminating. But if you start going down the road to hate, you're not going to want to go alone, and you're going to take somebody with you if you can. And I just want you all to know we need to be very careful with that, because the world markets hate. And there are groups whose sole mission is to create division in societies. Our government has people who are paid to do that, to run what we call color revolutions in other countries. And when I was a little boy, that's a thing that happened in faraway places. But today, those sort of things happen here in America, I'm afraid, and maybe by our enemies, maybe by our own government. I don't honestly know. But some of the things that were considered wild speculation when I was a kid, we now see happening. So be very careful about people who want you to hate. And I would just advise you, you can't go very far down the road to hate without leaving Christianity behind. And that's what I think a lot of 1st, 2nd John, 3rd John was about, is, hey, these people have left from us, right? You can't have them back in and teach anymore. And the lesson I expected when I was getting ready to teach that was going to be how bad they were and how much we hate them. Instead, the antidote, as Randy again brought us this morning, for that is love, is absolute and total love, and reminding us of our duty. And so that's what I had. And I'm so glad I didn't have to preach this as a sermon, because I think it would have come off too heavy. Discuss any comments. And I'm going to get water because my voice is dying. Mr. Bruce. Yeah, you dislike it.
I dislike it.
Yeah.
Because the Democrats are talking, they hate the Republicans.
Yes.
They hate Democrats, and nothing is accomplished.
Yeah.
I think we have got to be more tolerant of each other.
So for those of you maybe at home, Bruce's comments are he's very dissatisfied. He dislikes our two-party system. And he feels like Republicans are encouraged to hate Democrats and vice versa. And it means we can hardly get anything done. And what I find the most interesting about our system, I'll say this, Bruce, is if you really look closely behind the scenes, and I mean enrollment at Yale and Harvard, I have a first cousin who is the director of enrollment for an Ivy League school on the East Coast. The children of the high-level Republicans and the high-level Democrats go to school together, and they help get each other into those Ivy League schools. So the same people who are telling us to hate each other are actually working together. I'll be honest with you. They don't do it in public, and probably haven't since Joe Lieberman. Is anyone old enough to remember Lieberman? He wasn't my favorite, but he would go across the aisle. And then John McCain would come from the other side. Another guy who a lot of people are angry about. But those guys were famous for working together. And to me, that seems like a more charitable approach. I agree with you on the two-party system. But I will say, I think the two-party is somewhat of a facade. I hate to say that. And I think those people are probably have more in common with each other at the top level than they do with a peasant like me. Who lives in what they call flyover country. Isn't that cute that they have a name for us? Flyover country. Any other comments before I get too political? Does anybody else struggle with concepts of hate? Do you guys want to get your hate on? Or is it only me? Does it get better?
Such an integral part of us, we have to be careful because that comes to the norm. standard that as Christians, probably not a standard we need to have.
Well, and I'm going to summarize for our home audience. Todd's comment is we have to be careful if we flitter around with hate because it becomes the norm. The other thing I would say is if you put on a public facade of love, but you go home and gossip and badmouth, don't be surprised if your children tell you when they come of age that they don't believe in your religion and they don't think you're right, your righteousness is true, and because they've seen you crack that. And I know you all probably all have kids. I think there's only one family in here with little ones still. But if you say something different than you practice, your children will learn what you practice. They will not learn what you say. So if you think you can fool everybody in this building, you might be right. But don't think that you can fool anybody at your dining room table. Your kids know. Mr. Lingle. Sure. No, so again, for the home audience, Stuart says this starts with one step, so we need to be very careful. And I think that's absolutely correct. Calling your brother a fool, it seems like a thing that's between you and your brother. God has a different opinion from what we understand in the scripture. There's no room for calling your brother a fool or murdering your brother in your heart. That's a horrid mistake, and it's one you can't make lightly. And I'll be honest with you, the more steps you take down that road, and 1 John talks a lot about walking in the light. The further you get away from the light, the easier it is to take more steps because your path becomes more and more obscured. And Mr. Campbell, you had a comment.
Yeah.
It's terribly ugly. And again, as a character who came out of a legacy of hate, there's no, just as the fruits of the Spirit bring forth wonderful things, if you sow hate, the fruit that you bring forth is horrible. And it's distrust. And the only good news is I can spot a falsehood a mile away. I can be lied to, but it's hard. But a flim-flam artist or a con man or a speaker of untruths is easy to spot for me because I was raised up in a tradition similar to that. And those are people who have given over to, I can do these things in a sequence and get what I want. My heart's not in it and I don't care about God. And our society today, I know that we live in a wonderful place. And I thank God for Oklahoma and you good citizens and good Christians. But the world outside of our borders is moving fast. And it's moving in the devil's direction, I'm afraid, not in God's direction. I know that there's pockets, but I feel as though, to Donnell's point, the more we go down that road, the more those people will have an appetite. And honestly, we're going to be easy prey for them unless we're on guard. Thank you all so much for letting me get this out of the way. And thank you, Todd, again, for preaching for us this morning. I really appreciate you, brother. You all are dismissed.